Two for One at the Movies, episode number 13, Madagascar 3. Hi there, I'm Sean Cameron. As always, I'm joined by Stephen Jackson, and tonight we are talking about the movie Madagascar 3. It is tearing up the theaters right now, and being a summertime movie, it's great to take out the whole family and head out to the theater and check this movie out. As well, we've got a pre-recorded interview with Chantel Thompson. Now, Chantel Thompson was in the running for the Ticket to Oz, a CBC production looking for the next Dorothy for their Wizard of Oz production. So we've got that. We've got a movie pick from Steven and so much more right after the trailer on 2 for 1 at the Movies on whatsupwestman.ca.
Casino. Perfect. That's where we'll find the penguins.
Oh, you kill a fight like a bunch of little girls. Chimichanga. These pillows are filled with baby birds.
I drop down, grab the penguins, and we are out of here.
Oh, oh, let me drop down. I'll grab the penguins.
Enough. I'm gonna...
Initiate lockdown and get me animal control.
It's the first.
Capitaine Dubois, I am so happy to see you.
You fool! How could you let them get away?
All my fists!
Step on it, boys! Let's get out of here!
Voila! Je vais at 12 o'clock.
Guys, we've got a tail.
Paparazzi! Hi.
How do we move through Europe without attracting attention?
Wait! The circus.
This train is for circus animals only.
I don't trust lion. Hair too big and glossy. He's not lion. He's lioness.
This is awkward. Remember, we just lay low.
Just until the heat dies down.
We're invisible.
Mark. Marty?
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da, circus, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, Afro circus, Afro circus, Afro, polka-dot, Afro!
Really?
Move it! I like to move it, move it, I like to move it, move it, I like to move it, move it, you like to
move it!
I like to move it, move it, I like to move it, move it!
As I mentioned in the intro, I'm Sean Cameron. I am joined by Stephen Jackson, as always, and he's hanging out in Toronto, Ontario, but he's got some exciting theater news for his theater company, Myanmar Gaslight Productions, a new logo reveal, and some awesome news coming up for the show Real Life Superhero. First of all, welcome back, Stephen.
Well, thank you very much for having me again. Yeah, it's been an awesome week, actually. We just got our official logo done this week. And you can see it on Facebook or on Twitter right now. It's for Myanmar Gaslight Productions. It's a little ode to my dad, my mom, the farm they owned at one point called Myanmar Acres. So, but yeah, it's a new theater production company we started here in Toronto. My friend Stephen English and myself. We actually just did auditions this past weekend for our upcoming August show called Real Life Superhero.
Oh, right on. I was mentioning with Stephen, and I follow Myanmar Gaslight Productions as well as Stephen on Facebook, and I was quite worried earlier in the week, and you caused a bit of a social media stir by a certain post deletion or a group deletion. If you could tell us a little bit more about that, which, you know, shows you got a pretty good following out there.
Well, yeah, no, I did. Actually, it was kind of funny because everyone also went all concerned. I removed the event posting for it because we haven't had our official poster done for Real Life Superhero. It's not going to be done until probably like in about a week and a half. And I figured I wanted to redo the event on Facebook because I figured some people maybe didn't realize where the production was from and everything. So I'm going to hopefully connect it up a little better to myself. It's just kind of, you know how it is learning all these new social networking tools and such and getting it to work better for you. But yeah, no, it's still going on. I'm just changing up the logo for the poster design for the show. And it looks amazing already. I've already seen kind of a prelim of it already so far. So I got an amazing graphic designer named David Belanger who is designed our logo, but he's also designing our poster.
Awesome. Very, very exciting news for the, you know, theater community and your Myanmar Gaslight community in Toronto there. I'd like to give you a little bit of what I was up to today. We here in Brandon, we were doing the sixth installment of Gossip in the Graveyard, and it's something that, you know, I'm very proud to be a part of. I've hosted the tour each year along with Trish Bury, who is another, you know, very competent host, and we really enjoy, you know, sharing the tour with people. Basic premises: bunch of actors popped out into the cemetery in Brandon there, and it's an interactive 2-hour walking tour of the cemetery. And we talk about some of the interesting people and some of the characters from Brandon's history, and you know, share a couple laughs, and we also give a bit of a history lesson there. And just want to send a shout out to George Beery, obviously from Seven Ages Productions, and Kelly Lombard from Brocky Donovan Funeral Homes for doing the organizing of this year's event. And it's very exciting to say that it was the sixth year in a row that it was a sellout, and all the proceeds go to Westman Hospice, which are end of life and palliative care assistants. Working within our community. So a great charity event, I guess you could say, with a successful finish, which today put me in a little bit of an interesting position. And I was chatting with Stephen earlier in the afternoon. I got a lot of sun when I was out there in a very thick costume and a little bit of hay fever on top of it. So that's why I'm sounding a bit nasally, you might say, tonight. So,
and you would think that with the hat you're wearing, and if you take a look at that hat he was wearing, you think that would have blocked the sun out, but you know.
Yeah, to a good friend there, Matt Duboff, was out, and he was taking some photos out there, and you know, he's a very, very prominent Brandon photographer, and he does some great work, you know, obviously through What's Up Westman as well. And he's got a photo site himself that he does some amazing photos, and we were lucky enough to have him come out and join us. As well, we were lucky to have you know, a couple of videographers out there who are good friends of mine, and we're hopefully working on a project that'll we'll be able to announce in the coming weeks with regards to Gossip in the Graveyard and some of the stuff we had going on there. So it was an exciting weekend.
Well, it sounds like it. It's just an amazing experience. I used to work at a theater where we would do, on Halloween, they would do kind of a ghost walk through the theater. And it was just fascinating to learn the history and such. And it's a good way of promoting the history in a really new and exciting way.
For sure. And, you know, as we dubbed the tour, it's, you know, with the utmost respect to the pioneers of Brandon, it's not meant to be a spooky bump in the night type thing. Tour, it's meant to be you know, paying homage to the people that made this area of the world what it is, right? Through their decisions and through their hard work. So it was just an absolute ton of fun, and I just wanted to share that with everyone. So looking at this week now, we're about 5 or 6 minutes into the show, but looking at this week, we are talking about Madagascar 3, third installment in the DreamWorks Madagascar saga. I'm going to throw it over to Steven, and he's going to give you kind of a synopsis of what the movie's all about and his initial thoughts.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Madagascar 3 concerns, of course, the adventures of four animals, a giraffe, a lion, a zebra, and a hippo, who long ago in Madagascar 1 got lost, or kind of got stuck in New York and got sent to Madagascar. They tried to escape a second time and didn't work too much. And we dealt with a lot of the lion, voiced by Ben Stiller, his story and such. But this time around, they're determined to get back. They're getting back to America if it nearly kills them. And they decide that they're going to hook into a circus that is kind of stationed in Monaco. And they're going to get that circus. It's going to be touring through Europe to try and get them over to the United States. But of course, like all good Madagascar movies, you know, it doesn't quite go the way they expected. And it's a very humorous movie. This movie was... I went into it thinking, are we done? Are we tired yet of this story? And I can honestly say no. No, this was just a hilarious movie.
Yeah, that's kind of my, you know, thoughts on it as well. Obviously, having two young kids, you go to the movie theater and a show like Madagascar, especially for my oldest daughter, is a huge event for her, right? Heading out to the theater to see shows like that, she really likes it. We've watched the original Madagascar, the 2005 version, probably 300 times plus. So we alternate between that and the two Cars movies. So she's big into those type of movies. So as a parent, it's neat to see some new content, because I know 6 months from now it's going to be playing in our DVD player over and over and over and over again. So, which is nice now with digital copies, because you can just upload them and you don't have to worry about burning the DVD out or them touching it or using it as a frisbee or a coaster or anything like that. So,
For kids, this movie is such a visual splendor to watch. I mean, even just the sequences where they're doing the circus act were just phenomenal to watch. I really enjoyed the abstract nature of those circus scenes, and they kind of gave me that reminiscent feeling of some of the early Walt Disney films like Fantasia and such. I got a great joy of watching those scenes, and I can just totally see why a kid would just love it.
Very very cool scene in 3D too.
I didn't see it in 3D. I wish I it's one of those things, we made that choice. We were like going, okay, I don't know if we need to see some 3D. And we came out of it going, man, I wish I saw that in 3D.
Yeah.
Because you could just tell where all the 3D was coming from. And it was, again, it was just a visual splendor to watch this movie. And some amazing new characters to learn.
Do you think it's worthwhile for studios to still, if they are doing a 3D version, to still release a 2D version in theaters?
I think so. I mean, I think the 2D version, I mean, often a 3D version is a good $5-$6 more than the regular version. So, and also a lot of smaller theaters, I mean, some of the major theaters can show 3D movies, but some of the smaller ones like your AMC theaters, Rainbow Cinemas, those types of ones, we have those in Toronto and such, and they don't show the 3D movies because they don't have they're meant to be cheaper movies. So it's good to show them still in 2D. And I think, I mean, you can still enjoy this movie in 2D. I mean, I really enjoyed it still in 2D. So, I mean, yes, I wanted to see it in 3D afterwards, but I still enjoyed it.
Would you go back and pay the extra and see it again in 3D?
I might. I don't know. I saw Avengers twice, so I guess I could see this one twice.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking kind of, you know, you're a writer by trade, you know. At kind of the writing style, I guess, of these movies, and I'm going to take it a little broader scope and look kind of at, you know, combining like the Pixar, the DreamWorks universe. How do they keep banging out scripts that are popular? Like, what's their formula, or what do you think makes them tick?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I find you can definitely see the difference between a DreamWorks picture and a Pixar picture. I think you can definitely see the difference in the script. Like, for a Pixar picture, you find this immense amount of sentimental, and really, they really try and, they go for a more adult tone to the story. Like, if you think something like WALL-E, or even Story. Like Finding Nemo. Yeah, Toy Story, Finding Nemo. There's still a very adult quality about it. Where DreamWorks, I find, is just they're like a reverent satire. They make fun of so many things, but they make fun of it in such great ways. Like I remember in this movie, especially, they make great jokes about Cirque du Soleil. And right, I just thought that was the most humorous thing in the world type thing. I mean, some kids might not get it, but as adults, we got it. We knew exactly what they're talking about. And I think that's the great difference between the DreamWorks and Pixar. They're kind of grabbing their own niche markets. And I think that's really quite cool to actually see, and that they're both doing very well with them. As we saw this past weekend with Brave going number one and making almost $70 million too.
For sure. It's been a good couple of weeks for animated films. And I, you know, Brave's got some serious legs behind it right now, and I think we'll run for a while, obviously because of timing too.
Yeah, well, this movie too. I mean, you think about it, this movie came in number two this weekend, and it's been out for 3 weeks, and so people are still going to this even though they went to see Brave too. So I mean, I think that says a lot about animation right now and the power of it. And these movies are not cheap movies to make. Like, I mean, these movies are like your $150 million budgets.
Yeah, I think I was looking there. Madagascar 3 comes in right around $150 million.
And you think, well, why they cost so much? But they just take so long to put together for all the visuals and all. Like, I mean, if you ever stay at the end of the credits of these movies, you just go right through every single artist that's working on this movie. And there's a lot of artists.
Right. You know, do you think it's... an element, going back to the writing there a bit, do you think it's an element of a kind of punch counter punch? Like this DreamWorks Pixar back and forth has been going back to the original Shrek and Toy Story, really.
It has been. I mean, what's fascinating is that we're not even in putting into, you know, the equation of anything about Disney. And it's funny, Disney's kind of just snuck back in the distance a little bit. I mean, we had a few movies like Tangled, The Princess and the Frog and such, but they're not quite doing the same business as these two companies are doing. I mean, Pixar originally was Disney and Pixar. We're starting to see now. I don't know if they... I don't believe they're still working together. It's mostly just Pixar by itself. But, yeah, I know these two companies are really going at it at the box office.
Do you think Disney needs to adapt?
I think Disney's going to have to. I mean, the thing about Disney, though, is it's always got that name to it and such, so... And they're going kind of a different route. They're doing a lot more live-action animal films, which is quite different. But the problem, I think, with Disney is that, I mean, they really love their 2D animation. And don't get me wrong, I love the 2D animation. I mean, my favorite movies of all time are some of the best Disney films that didn't have the 3D effects and such. So I think they've still got to keep their name. But, I mean, we're going to need to see some new stuff from Disney.
For sure. You know, looking at... being an animated film, it's tough to talk about the art or the whether it's a stylized film or that type of thing. Do you think there's a particular art to these films?
Well, this one, it's interesting. It's actually very geometric. If you ever look at the characters and everything, they're very geometric in all their shapes and sizes. That's all I can really say about it. I mean, I think Madagascar right now, it's kind of gone away from a lot of the... let's say an auteurship or a style of filmmaking type thing. It's now gone to the point where it's almost routine a little bit, but it's going off some really great and funny scripts, and it knows how to introduce new characters who are quite fascinating.
Right. Very Madagascar, you know, especially, and I've seen it in all three of them now.
Yeah.
Very much has a kind of old slapstick element to it.
Oh, very much so. And just little sight gags, like, all over the place.
Yeah, especially, you know, all their interaction with the David Schwimmer character as the giraffe.
Oh.
I love the scene, and this is going back a while now, but in the original movie where he's in the box and they're in the crates while they're kind of floating in the ocean waiting to land on the island. And he's in the box and he keeps flipping... So he's in different stages in the box in different directions. Very, you know, very simple, but a very cool little element that, you know, you get a chuckle out of. And it's he's not saying anything that really is groundbreaking at that time, but they do a lot with the visuals in those movies.
Very much so. I mean, I think, again, you can see it in this one, like that chase sequence they do through the streets of Monaco. was phenomenal. Just to see the visuals of each of the characters and how they dealt with that change and such. Again, it's just a very beautiful movie to watch.
We look at, the second movie very much focuses around Alex, the lion, Ben Stiller's character. Do you think this is a bit more of an ensemble piece?
Well, actually, what I noticed about this one more than anything else was that they were really working very hard to work the new characters in, the circus characters, and they really made it a lot less about them in some ways. But what was interesting was that they dealt with them as fully made characters, which I think they're kind of almost acknowledging the fact that at this point, the characters have already been defined. We know who these characters are, and we know they're we know that they should know how to work together to some degree, but they almost work. It's almost like there's almost two characters. There's like this group of characters with Alex and Marty and such, and you got the circus characters who are another bunch of characters. So it's almost like almost two different characters going on, the two groups.
Fairly strong cast too. You know, you're looking obviously Ben Stiller being the marquee name there, but you have Chris Rock, David Schwimmer, Sacha Baron Cohen, who's involved in a lot.
Cedric the Entertainer,
Jessica Chastain.
Yep, she got in there.
You're one of your faves, isn't she?
Oh yeah, you know, she had a great year last year with all the films she was in. I guess an Oscar nomination last year for The Help. It's nice to see she's doing some fun stuff too.
Yeah,
and she has a great role as that. I think it's like a cheetah. I think it is in this film. She's just had a great time with that, I think.
And it's funny. Her character name is Gia, which normally associated with films means disaster, but she actually does well. And Martin Short, you always, at least I do, you always have those characters in the movie where you watch the entire movie and you stay to the credits because you're like, whose voice is that?
Yes.
Right? And I was like, I got to watch to the end because I didn't look much at IMDb beforehand. Like, I have to know who that voice is, right?
And sometimes you have no idea. Like, I didn't even catch on who the voice was for that. And the other one was, and it's, again, a great new character, the Italian police officer, or the woman who rounds up the animals.
Oh, Frances McDormand.
Frances McDormand. I mean, how amazing is that? Like, she did a great job in this. Yeah. And I just loved how they built on her character. Like, we were just killing ourselves laughing during this movie when that chase sequence was happening and she was going after them.
Yeah.
She just seemed like the most invulnerable like person on the face of the planet. I mean, it was awesome. I loved that character. I'm hoping that they really, I know they kind of, she got kind of caught at the very end, but I'm hoping they take her character a little further. I'd really be interested in that.
I like the fact of animated movies where an actor, you know, they always say, oh, you know, it'd be great to do animated movies. You could get up in your pajamas and go downstairs and drink your coffee and record your lines or whatever the case may be. But you have to put a lot into being a voice for these movies. You know, somebody like Sacha Baron Cohen, really, you don't even recognize him as,
lemur.
The lemur, yeah. Julian, right?
King Julian. Oh, yeah, I know. Well, I think it's fascinating is that, yeah, you're right. It's a different skill set because some people make great voices and some people don't. And the people who make great voices are people who are really animated. Like Robin Williams, there's a reason why the genie was so amazing in Aladdin is because he was so animated himself as a person.
Right.
The great skill about it is that you have to do it with no one in the room, not looking at the animation at all. You're literally doing it without really... It's all your voice. You have to be able to translate everything with your voice. And it's a great skill to have. I mean, a lot of people don't think of it as being a great acting performance, but that's why it's becoming seen a lot more respect. There's a lot more respect for a voice actor these days. A lot more people are doing voice work and such like that. But, I mean, we can see when we see someone really good doing it. Like, I'll be honest, David Schwimmer, I think, is just one of the finest voice actors you can get. When he's doing Melman in this movie, it's incredible. He's just really, really good at doing this voice.
Yeah, you know, and I wonder if it doesn't have something to do, and I'm just looking at the cast list here, whether it has something to do with there's more than a couple people that are stand-up comedians.
Yeah, that, I think that's very much of it, because again, it's one of those skill sets that if you don't catch them with your voice, you're not going to catch them. And you're also probably at some point doing other voices, even if you're not necessarily doing like different accents per se, but you probably get to do a lot more of that stuff when you're a stand-up comedian than you would in any other actor.
Right. Right. Yeah. Cause you look, you know, Martin Short, I know, has done some elements of stand-up comedy. Andy Richter.
Yeah. Chris Rock.
Chris Rock. I'm sure Ben Stiller has.
Cedric the Entertainer.
At some point in his career, Cedric the Entertainer, Sacha Baron Cohen with a lot of improv work.
Yeah.
David Schwimmer, I'm not sure of, but like I say, there is a higher than average number of stand-up comedians that do this type of work, and you know, obviously the pinnacle being Robin Williams as the genie.
Yeah, very much so. And I think, you know, I think we're starting again someone who did stand-up, right? I mean, it makes so much more sense to get people like that. I mean, sometimes you get people who I remember seeing Romeo and Juliet last year, I think it was. And I mean, good actors. I mean, but I mean, they weren't necessarily the voice actors. You know, they weren't a lot of them weren't people who stood out as voice actors, but they're good actors. But I think it takes a different skill set to be able to pull off an animated movie and have a voice that really catches people's attention.
And, you know, one group of people that rarely get the mention for, you know, their work in movies like this are the animators.
Yeah, I mean, to create these characters and to bring them to life without the voice, if you think about it, it's almost like you're acting the part without actually vocalizing anything. And it's almost hard to imagine that. It's almost like it almost goes back to the early art of like silent movies to some degree, if you think about it. And right. Again, they're not recognized. I mean, we have the Annie Awards, which is the awards for animation of the year and such. But there's really nothing in regards to the Oscars that really acknowledges animation. Sometimes you get, I've seen sometimes where they got nominated for art direction and such, but it's very rare. I mean, I think I remember Beauty and the Beast getting nominated for art direction. And I mean, it deserved it. It had some amazing artwork in that movie. But again, they rarely get nominated for that.
Right. Fairly short movie too.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about how long it takes to make an animated movie, I remember when I was in college, I actually took an animation class.
Right.
And I remember once we had to create, what was it? Oh, geez. It was like 1 minute of animation with clay.
Right, yeah.
And it took us 8 hours to do 1 minute. And I mean, that was not getting it perfect. I mean, this was, and we had to like, you know, turn off the lights every once in a while because the Play-Doh would melt. And yeah. It takes a lot of work. I mean, you're literally taking a clip one frame at a time. So when you think about it, you think, well, that's pretty short, but it's really, really short. There's what, 20, 30 frames in a second?
Right, yeah.
So for every 30 frames, you get 1 second of film.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's an amazing amount of work, and that's why an animated movie takes so long to do. And you can imagine why in their heyday, like Disney, for instance, would take 7 to 8 years to do an animated movie.
Right. An interesting moment too, and this is a homage back to kind of, and this is a bit obscure, but it was something that I liked in the movie. You know, Chantal Dubois' character singing that little bit, minute or so of the "No, je ne regrette rien," you know, I regret nothing, right?
Yes.
To her henchman. A very, very cool moment.
It was, and what was great about it, I mean, it's... There's so many great moments in this movie revolving around that villain. Again, this is just a great villain who didn't necessarily have to say a lot, but just played such an amazing part in this movie. But that scene, yeah, because it actually kind of got you a little bit of heart to this movie. And you actually kind of sympathized for a split second with her. Until then you have to remind myself, oh, wait, all those animals' heads were on the wall like about like half an hour ago before.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, but, I mean, it was a very cute moment. And one of those moments that I never imagined they would do that type of thing. It kind of came out of left field. It made sense completely.
I did some searching, and Edith Piaf was the singer of it, and it's a 1960s recording. Recorded the song to members of the French Foreign Legion. And it's now become part of the French Foreign Legion heritage and is sung when they are on parade.
Wow. Due and to now we're going to think from Madagascar 3.
Yeah, due to the men's reaction, it is assumed that all of them serve or served in the French Foreign Legion. Just to kind of tie it in there, but it cool little moment in the movie.
Yeah, but the other moment I loved just before that was it was one where she gets put in jail.
Right.
And she escapes.
Yeah.
My God, I was killing myself laughing during that scene where she comes out of the bed. It was just... it was just too funny, and it was just the confidence of that villain was just so striking about it. That's what was so great about it, was just the confidence of the villain.
Is this the end of Madagascar?
Is this the end of this?
Yeah,
it's really hard to say. You know, I mean, this movie has done an awesome amount of business. I just don't know where you take the story now. Like, what do you do with them now? I mean, they've made a choice about New York, about what to do about it.
Right.
And that's really what the whole goal was from the very beginning. So, I mean, you can see where it goes on the road to some degree, but with the circus and such. But I'm not too sure where you take it from here. I really don't know.
There's been lots of kind of spin-off work out of this, too, when you look at, especially with the Penguins.
Yeah, they had their own TV show for a period of time.
Yeah.
and it was cute. And I mean, it made sense, though. I mean, I enjoyed it a little bit. But sometimes these movies just don't make great animated shows. That's all I can say. It's just, they just don't really quite grasp the same humor level, the same kind of, you know, importance as the movies hit.
Right, right. Looking, just kind of shifting gears a bit here, I'm jumping over to Box Office Mojo. And yeah. I always like to look at the showdowns. You know, the 3-day total versus 3-day total, or the 17-day total versus, you know, they always have those showdowns.
Yes.
And Brave is actually surpassing right now WALL-E for their 3-day total. So, you know, Disney taking a significant bite out of the 3-day total of a Pixar movie.
Very much so. But I mean, I think with... it's interesting, but both these movies were they're actually not that far apart. Like, 3 million really is not big of a difference, and that could be just seriously inflation. They think about it.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is that they're both movies that were complete challenges. That they're risks in some ways. Because if you look at a movie like WALL-E, I mean, the first half of that movie has no dialogue.
Yeah.
And it's about this little robot just wandering around with no dialogue. Where Brave, again, it's the first time they've had a female heroine or a heroine for a Pixar movie and such. So they're both kind of risk. They're kind of risking their audience a little bit. I remember I did read somewhere about Brave and how the audience was actually pretty split down the middle, men to women, male, female, which was a good sign for it and its longevity, because if it had been mostly female, it'll probably drop off really fast, but I think it's going to hold on for a lot longer. It also got some really great reviews, and so I'm looking forward to when we can review it on here, actually.
For sure, yeah, that's definitely one I want to check out. And as well, we were talking a little bit before we went on air about one that I think I'm going to go check out, and then Steven already has, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Because that's exactly how it happened. Oh, wow. I this movie, well, and I know we're going to talk about it, but I think you just have to see it to believe it. You know, it's one of those movies that you may tell yourself, I don't think I'm that interested in it, but you have to see it to believe it.
Right.
And I mean, and Sean, yeah, you know me and everything. I'm a huge American history buff.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm a buff about the presidents and everything. And I actually just recently went down to Springfield, Illinois, where Lincoln lived for most of his years.
Right, yeah.
And I was watching this movie, and I'm not sure if I should be laughing through it or not, but I was laughing at certain things that other people weren't laughing at.
Yeah.
Because I was sitting going, oh my, that's not how it happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, relationships between people and everything, and how they portray Mary Todd. Anyways, but I had a great time during it. I had a great time in this movie, but it was just, you have to see it to believe it.
Yeah, it should be a bunch of fun there. Looking forward to that. And that's kind of the same way I went in, and I actually seen it at the Evans. Kind of the same way I went in to say Jesus Christ Vampire Slayer.
Yes.
You know, same exactly. Sort of mindset going in there. So, Let's take a look at what else is going on at the theaters right now. We have That's My Boy, the Adam Sandler, Andy Samberg pick.
Going down in flames? Yep.
Going down in flames, absolutely. Yes. 18A rating in Canada.
Yep, that's where Adam Sandler is right now.
Which which really, you know, surprised me. And I might go see it, but I'm looking at this today.
Really?
And
really? Are you going to go see it?
I might. But I'm watching this and I'm saying to myself, my God, you know, and we were watching it this afternoon. It was on TV, was The Wedding Singer, right?
Oh, okay.
Which I thought was a delightful movie. Like, it's a very nice movie. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this is where Adam Sandler's career has gone, is That's My Boy. Because The Wedding Singer, I thought, was a good movie.
Well, I mean, I think Adam Sandler, I think he's stuck. He's in a major, like, midlife crisis right now. Because he's done actually some really neat movies that were more serious.
Right.
I'm not sure if you saw this one movie. It's about one of my favorite one of my favorite directors. His name is Mike Binder. He made one called Rain Over Me. It was Adam Sandler and Don Cheadle.
Okay, yeah.
And it was a really cute movie, actually. I really enjoyed it. And it has a little bit of a serious tone to it.
Right.
But, I mean, he keeps going back to these movies. And it's like, do you not see what the problem is? Like, even if you look at something like Grown Ups, for instance, which actually did well at the box office.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of heavy hitters in that movie. And it really didn't do as well as I think it really should have hit.
And it's one of those things where his entire movie career is kind of Saturday Night Live sketches, you know?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, exactly. It's almost to the point, and half the cast members are Saturday Night Live cast members now too. So
yeah. Well, he's keeping them employed, I guess. As well, we got Rock of Ages there, which we're going to go and check out hopefully this week.
Yeah, I think we better see it soon. It's not doing very well at all at the box office.
Yeah, which really surprises me. I would have thought that one would have done a lot better than it has. And I got a couple of friends who are big hair metal guys, so they were quite impressed with it. So I definitely am going to go out and check that out.
Well, I'm going to go see it anyways. I mean, I saw the stage show in Toronto here, and it was one of those shows where I went, oh, I don't know if I should really see this. I don't really like, you know, jukebox musicals. And I fell in love with the show. I fell in love with the stage show completely. Mind you, it had a really good one of the actors in it who's one of the guys who works at the bar, was played by Aaron Wapool, who a lot of Canadian listeners will know from Canadian Idol. I guess one of the seasons he was on.
Okay.
And he's just on Broadway right now in Jesus Christ Superstar, the Stratford Productions. So.
Oh, right on. Who's he playing on that?
Sorry?
Who's he playing in that?
He plays Annis.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, he plays Annis in that production. But it's the one that came from Stratford, Ontario. So it's not doing so well on Broadway right now, but he's really quite a talent to see on stage. Really, he's a great singer, but he's also a wonderful actor.
Right on. As well, Madagascar 3 in 3D, yep. And in regular standard def. Brave, as we mentioned earlier, Snow White and the Huntsman still holding on at the theaters. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter in 3D.
I'm amazed how that movie does any well in Canada, but I'm sure it will do just fine.
Prometheus, Madagascar 3, obviously the standard def, Brave the standard def, and oddly enough, still holding on in Brandon, Manitoba is Men in Black 3.
Which I actually saw.
And what'd you think?
It was actually a lot of fun. I was actually quite surprised by it. It kind of kept me interested through most of it, actually. So it was actually, and it had a kind of an emotional little story to it. So yeah, I enjoyed it.
Right on. Looking at, we have an interview we're going to play here right now. It's about a week old now. I had a chance to catch up with Chantel Thompson. Chantel Thompson is currently looking to be in the running for CBC's production of Over the Rainbow, the Wizard of Oz kind of live CBC show starting in September. Brandon, born and raised, she's been involved in theater at Vincent Massey High School, Mecca Productions for quite a lot of her life, Step in Time Dance Studio, and as well some Seven Ages Productions as well. So very cool to be able to chat with her, and she's very excited for this opportunity wherever it may take her. Now, Stephen had mentioned before we went on the air that he had a connection to a previous sort of CBC show like this, and a person he knew. So,
well, yeah, it was actually a gentleman I worked with that used to work as an usher at the Elgin and Winter Garden Theatre here in Toronto, and this one gentleman who I knew, his girlfriend actually ended up being the fourth came in fourth on the Sound of Music show they did a few years ago, where they tried to find the next Maria. The woman who actually did end up becoming Maria, which is quite funny, she ended up doing Rock of Ages with Aaron Wapool, which I thought was quite funny, actually.
Right.
Yeah, kind of weird connection there. but no, they're fascinating shows. I mean, and yeah, and she came in fourth. And she was great. Her name was Marissa. I can't remember her last name offhand, but wonderful performer. And, you know, when you get on these shows, you do get a boost for your career, no matter where you place, almost. So it's quite an honor for her to be even in the running for this, really.
Awesome. Yeah, so I will flip over to Chantel's interview, and then we'll be right back after that.
Okay, so excellent. You've been away from Brandon for a little while now. What's keeping you busy? I noticed the number I called was New York, New York. So
it sure is. I moved here about 2.5 years ago. I moved here for musical theater school at the American Musical and Dramatic Academy, and I finished that last year in May. And since then, I have been working and performing. I just finished a Broadway, off-Broadway run of Talent 101. It's a new musical, which was pretty much the plot of Glee, the TV show. And I played the Rachel-type character, although her name was Rebecca Goldman. It was a really, really fun show, and I had a great time. And I just got cast in a new play called Pride River Crossing, which I'm really excited about. I get to play a bunch of different characters, so it's a really great opportunity to be able to play so many roles in one show. It's a really great chance to show off my acting abilities. And I've been doing some background work for some TV shows and films in the city. I did it's a new show for the Sci-Fi Network called School Spirits. That was really fun. And I did a feature film called Monica Z, and a couple other short films and student films as well.
Awesome. Obviously today and over the last day or so, the Facebook world has been taken in storm, no kind of pun intended there, with Over the Rainbow. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and how in the heck did you end up being involved in that, and, you know, what's it all about?
Well, my parents were actually the ones who made me get involved in it. They practically forced me to send in the video, but I was like, there's no way, Mom and Dad, I don't know why I'm doing this, nothing is going to happen, this is just a waste of my time. And lo and behold, I get a call on Sunday, and I couldn't even believe my ears. I really had no idea that anything would happen. It was crazy, and I was so excited, and now, like, my Facebook has been blowing up, and I don't think I've ever been on Facebook, or my cell phone or email has never been so crazy in my life. I feel so unbelievably supported by the people in Brandon and all of my friends and family. I can't even believe it. I feel so honored and so blessed. So what happens is that I've made the top 10 of the online submissions for the Ticket to Oz for Over the Rainbow. And if I get the most votes, which I really, really hope I will, I'm going to get sent to Toronto on June 21st, and that will be the top 100 girls in Canada. And from there, they're going to narrow it down to the top 20 who will appear live on your TV in September.
Awesome. Obviously, Facebook's kind of the main point of engagement, and as well through the CBC website. And I noticed that you can vote multiple times during the day, so we definitely want to make sure people are voting once and then voting often after that. So
every hour.
Yeah, absolutely. Every hour, I noticed you can cast your ballot there. You know, I had a chance to talk with Nancy Pitcairn the other day just briefly about this whole experience, and, you know, she was really excited for you. How did that base at Vincent Massey and some of the stuff you've done in the community prepare you for you know, where you are now?
Well, I definitely would not be where I am right now if it weren't for Ms. Fitton and Minnick Roy Keller and Lisa Vasconcelos and Linda Kearns and everybody and George Beery, everybody involved in the arts in Brandon, Manitoba. They've all played a huge role in getting me to where I am today. I literally, like, in high school for sure, like, being involved in all the major productions, and I was in the musical theater class where I got the opportunity to do, like, some of the back-end stuff of theater, which was a huge blessing, and it was really exciting, too, because I got to choreograph and do sets and all those kinds of things, too. Like, Ms. McCarran gave us a huge opportunity in letting us direct our own show, so I definitely really appreciate that. And like, I've been involved in Mecca my whole life and in Seven Ages as well, and I've been dancing since I was 3 at Step in Time, and all of those people have played a major role in my life, and I can literally cannot thank them enough for what they've done for me.
Awesome. I had a chance to talk with you know, one of your former castmates, I believe, in Eric Markowitz there a couple of weeks back, and you know, he's just finished up a run of La Cage Folle on the East Coast. And I asked him this question, and I want to ask you as well, you know, having gone to the kind of bright lights, I guess, in the big city, what advice would you give to somebody coming up through the ranks right now? What would be that one pearl of wisdom you'd hand over to them to say about, you know, chasing your dream?
I mean, I'm sure everybody says it, but don't take no for an answer. There's going to be a million people in your life, especially in the arts, that are going to tell you you're not good enough, you're not worth it, there's nothing that's special enough about you, but you need to take that and run with it. Just go after your dreams, never stop, work as hard as you can, because I was told in school here in New York that there's 3 things to performing. You need to have the talent, you need to have the work ethic, and you need to have some dumb luck. And you only need to have 2 of the 3. And if you have the hard work and the talent, you're golden. If you happen to have the luck, then you're gonna shoot past the stars. So you just need to go for it and never give up, because if you take the chance, it is probably going to work out for you.
Awesome. So people, as we mentioned, can jump on the CBC website, can vote on Over the Rainbow till Sunday, I believe, right?
Saturday? Yeah.
Okay, so all I can say is, you know, get on there, vote early, vote often. And you know what? I really appreciate, Chantel, you talking with us, and I wish you all the best in this endeavor.
Thank you so much. It's been a real honor, and I love all of you back home. Thank you.
Okay, as I mentioned, we did have an interview there with Chantel Thompson. She is in the running for Over the Rainbow and the Ticket to Oz, basically, for CBC's productions this fall. I'm looking at the Over the Rainbow Ticket to Oz website, and I noticed Darren Jones is the host of this. He's been around the CBC world for a while as a writer for the Rick Mercer Report. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. Just looking at him, he kind of seems like CBC's counterpunch to Ben Mulrooney.
Or Ryan Seacrest in the States.
Or Ryan Seacrest in the States, absolutely.
Well, I mean, I think these shows are interesting. When they did the first one, and we have to remember the other great thing about this is that this is a production that's directed by Andrew Lloyd Webber. So,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of cool. And it's got new music. I mean, I can't remember who's writing the music for this show, but no, these shows are quite fascinating to watch, and you get it's kind of like watching a really nice version of American Idol.
Right, yeah.
You know, a Canadian nice version of it, you know?
Yeah. His tagline on the website is, he's sure to have some great advice for our Dorothys throughout the series and be able to keep Andrew Lloyd Webber in check. So, random writer guy from Rick Mercer Report, best of luck keeping Andrew Lloyd Webber in check.
We will see about that.
Just looking, we had the Chantel Thompson interview. Was there anything else you had going on or interesting tidbits that you wanted to share this week?
Well, I do you feel like we should talk to viewers about Prometheus, what happened with that? Or
sure, yeah. We were originally going to have Kevin Selinger, a friend of ours, join us for the Prometheus chat, which still might happen at some point. We ran into kind of some logistical hiccups, and I'm gonna still chat with Kevin, and I'll insert it in an upcoming episode. We just had run into some blips on the radar, you might say, in getting that to air. So,
but yeah, I remember we were chatting with Kevin, and he's very interested in Rock of Ages as well too. So, I mean, I think I'd love to see us do a review of Rock of Ages in the coming weeks. Brave. We can definitely talk more about Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. That would be quite a joyous thing to talk about.
For sure, yeah, and we may bring his guest commentary in there, because he has an interesting take on it, and Prometheus just didn't work out in the cards. But Kevin, we're keeping you firmly on the radar, and if you're listening, we might hit you up for Rock of Ages or something along that line. So. On that note, it looks like we have come to the end of our time frame for this week. We're looking, obviously, upcoming weeks at a show like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer, as we mentioned. So stay
Vampire
tuned for that one.
Vampire Hunter, not Slayer.
Oh, Vampire.
He's not Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I tell you. He's not that. That's
Sorry, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Much different connotation there.
Completely different.
Yeah. So it should be good. We should have that coming up in the next couple of weeks, and probably Rock of Ages as well. So just take a look for those. Stephen, once again, I would like to thank you so much for joining me from Toronto.
Well, thank you for having me. This is a great talking about this film and talking about movies in general.
Awesome. And as always, you can check out our podcasts. They are available on iTunes by searching What's Up Westman. As well, our podcasts are available on whatsupwestman.ca and as well on CJ106 weekly. A couple times a week there, we'll be popping in and out on CJ106. And thanks to Jill Ferguson and the crew over at ACC for allowing us to do that. I'm Sean Cameron. He was Stephen Jackson. This was Madagascar 3. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.